ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Service, Text 32. Yatahyavahitovanir
Yatahyavahitovanir
Darushvekasvayonishu
Darushvekasvayonishu
Naneva bhati vishvatma
Naneva bhati vishvatma
Bhuteshu cha tata puman
Bhuteshu cha tata puman
The Lord as super soul pervades all things, just as fire permeates wood. And so he appears to be of many varieties, though he is the absolute one without a second. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by one of his plenary parts, expands himself all over the material world, and his existence can be perceived even within the atomic energy. Matter, antimatter, proton, neutron, etc. are all different effects of the Paramatma feature of the Lord. As from wood, fire can be manifested, or as butter can be churned out of milk, so also the presence of the Lord as Paramatma can be felt by the process of legitimate hearing and chanting of the transcendental subjects, which are especially treated in the Vedic literatures like the Upanishads and Vedanta. Srimad Bhagavatam is the bona fide explanation of these Vedic literatures. The Lord can be realized through the oral reception of the transcendental message, and that is the only way to experience the transcendental subject. As fire is kindled from wood by another fire, the divine consciousness of a man can similarly be kindled by another divine grace. His divine grace, the spiritual master, can kindle the spiritual fire from the wood-like living entity by imparting proper spiritual messages injected through the receptive ear. Therefore, one is required to approach the proper spiritual master with receptive ears only. And thus divine existence is gradually realized. The difference between animality and humanity lies in this process only. A human being can hear properly, whereas an animal cannot. Translation again. The Lord, as the super soul, pervades all things, just as fire permeates wood. And so he appears to be of many varieties, though he is the absolute one without a second. So, in the previous verse we read how the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, expands into the material world as the Paramatma. And as the Paramatma, he enters into all things. He enters into the hearts of the living entities. He enters into the atoms, and he enters into the space between the atoms. And so, the Paramatma feature is all pervading. Now here, the Bhagavatam says that just as fire pervades wood, similarly the Paramatma pervades all things. But fire is the same, whether it's ignited from mahogany wood or red wood. But superficially we will see that we may see that, you know, mahogany wood is different from red wood, and therefore that manifestation of the super soul is different. But actually the super soul is the same. So in the same way, the super soul is present in the hearts of all living entities. And some living entities are plants, some are aquatics, some are human beings, some are demigods, some are pious people, some are sinful people. But although the different manifestations appear different, the super soul is the same. In fact, Srila Prabhupada argues that the fact that different people act differently is the proof that the individual soul is distinct from the super soul. Because the super soul within every body is the same. But then why is someone a doctor? Why is someone a lawyer? Why is someone a warrior? Why is someone a farmer? Why is someone a laborer? Why is someone pious? Why is someone sinful? It's not because of the super soul, because the super soul is the same. But rather, the differences are on account of the individual souls. And therefore, the individual souls are individual and distinct. It's not that every soul is the same. Now, we read in Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere that the super soul is the overseer and witness. And actually, the individual soul cannot act without the permission of the super soul. And sometimes it is said, not a blade of grass can move without the permission of the Lord. So the Lord, as the well-wisher of all living entities, gives the same dictation to every living entity that, why are you loitering in the material world? Why don't you surrender to me? And we read in the Upanishads, as quoted in last week's verse, that the individual soul, or Jivatma, and the super soul, or Paramatma, are both situated within the heart. The Upanishads give the example of two birds sitting on the same branch of a tree. So the tree is like the body, and the nest is like the heart. And within the heart there are two entities, or two birds. And one is the individual soul who's trying to enjoy the fruits on the tree, trying to enjoy sense gratification, and sometimes the fruits are sweet and sometimes the fruits are bitter. And the other bird, who is the super soul, is the witness. But although he's the witness and doesn't interfere with the activities of the individual soul, still the super soul knows what is the best interest of the individual soul. And the best interest of the individual soul is to surrender to the super soul, who always accompanies the individual soul as his best friend, as the super soul. So when the living entity becomes frustrated, tired and frustrated, trying to enjoy the material world, and he turns towards his friend who accompanies him, body after body, life after life, and is ready to surrender to him, then the Lord within the heart becomes very pleased. And he gives the intelligence to the individual soul how to come to him. So the Lord is neutral. He is the same in everyone's heart, and he's neutral. And he awards the living entities the results of their activities according to their work. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the judge. The judge is neutral, but according to the differences of the plaintiffs and the defendants, the judge is awarding different types of punishments and awards. But the judge is the same. So similarly, the super soul is the same in every body. But why one person is blessed with success in a certain way, and why another person is condemned with failure in a certain way, depends on the individual's work or karma. But otherwise, the super soul is the same in every heart, and the super soul is neutral. And it's because of how the individual soul uses his minute independence or misuses his minute independence, he gets different results. Now, the question will arise among devotees that, okay, the living entity is enjoying and suffering in the material world, and the super soul is waiting for the living entity to turn towards him and surrender to him. But where do we fit in? Is there anything we can do to help the living entity to surrender to the Supreme Lord? Because as servants of the Supreme Lord, we want to assist the Lord's mission. So here, the answer is given with reference to the same example, but a different application. And the example is that fire is in wood, but it has to be ignited by fire. And then the fire that's in the wood comes out. So in the same way, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, love of Krishna is eternally situated within the hearts of the living entities. And it just has to be awakened. And Srila Prabhupada gives the similar example that fire is there in a match. You just have to strike the match and the fire will come out. So similarly, Krishna or Krishna consciousness is there within the heart. You just have to strike the heart and the Krishna consciousness will come out. And the striking process is associating with devotees and hearing from devotees. And therefore we can help ignite the Krishna consciousness within the hearts of the living entity, or we can help to manifest Krishna within the hearts of the living entities through the process of hearing and chanting, through giving the living entities the chance to hear and chant in the association of devotees. And therefore Lord Krishna himself says, Naham tishtami vaikunte yoginam hridaye shubha, that I am not present in the Vaikuntha planets, nor am I present in the hearts of the yogis, but I am there wherever my devotees are chanting my glories. So we can invoke the presence of the Lord by chanting the glories of the Lord. Because on the absolute platform, there's no difference between the Lord and his name, his form, his qualities, his pastimes, and so on. So when we chant the holy name of Krishna, Krishna is present, dancing on our tongue, as Srila Prabhupada says, as Rupa Goswami says. In the relative world or the material world, the word and the object are different. So in the relative world, if we're thirsty and we chant water, 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 just chanting water, water will not quench our thirst, because the word water and the substance water are different. But in the spiritual realm or the absolute realm, the name of the thing and the thing are the same. So when we chant Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna is personally present, dancing on our tongues. So the same applies whether we chant the name of Krishna or describe the form of Krishna, Venum Kanvanta Maravinda Dalaya Taksham, or whether we discuss the qualities of Krishna, for example, how merciful he is, or we discuss the pastimes of Krishna, how he plays with the residents of Vrindavan or speaks the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. When we talk about Krishna, Krishna is present in the form of transcendental sound. And therefore, when the devotee preaches, he can awaken the Krishna consciousness in the hearts of the audience. But then again, Srila Sanatana Goswami advises us that we should not hear Harikathamritam from Avaishnavas. He says that one should not hear Harikatha from non-devotees, because although milk is very nutritious, if it's touched by the lips of a serpent, the effects can be poisonous. So similarly, although Harikatha is amrit, nectar, we should not hear it from Avaishnavas, because some poison will enter Harikatha. And therefore, to get the effect of Harikatha that we're discussing, where the Lord is manifest within the heart, and where Krishna consciousness is manifest, we should hear from devotees. And therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has ordered his devotees to chant Harikatha wherever they can. Yare deke tarikaha Krishna upadesh. And by such discussions, the presence of the Lord is invoked. Now, there's a very nice discussion by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur about how bhakti arises within the heart of the living entity. Here Srila Prabhupada says that the fire is already there in the wood, potentially, but it has to be ignited by fire from another piece of wood. So in the same way, Krishna consciousness in the heart of one living being will ignite the Krishna consciousness in the heart of another living being. So here we come to a very subtle point. How is it that Krishna consciousness is ignited in the hearts of some and not in the hearts of others? For example, Srila Prabhupada traveled all over the world and preached, but not everyone who heard him responded in the same way. And as we have been discussing, that the Lord within the heart, Paramatma, is equal to all living entities. He has to be equal to all living entities. Krishna is the Supreme Father of all living entities, and the Father must be equal to all of the children. Why someone takes to Krishna consciousness and why someone else does not take to Krishna consciousness cannot be attributed to the super soul, to the Lord. There must be some other explanation. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur raises the question, all right, well, we cannot say that the cause of bhakti is the mercy of the Lord, because the Lord is equal to everyone. But we don't see that bhakti arises equally in everyone. There must be some other explanation. So he says that, well, the explanation could be the mercy of the devotee, that by the mercy of the devotee, someone gets bhakti. And there too someone may object, well, the devotee also should be equal to everyone. But the Bhagavatam explains that the preacher, the Madhyam Bhagavata, does not deal the same way with everyone. Prema Maitri Kripa Peksha Sakaroti Samadhyama. That he gives his love to the personality of Godhead. He makes friendship with devotees. He gives his mercy to innocent people. And he neglects envious people. So the specific function of giving mercy belongs to the Madhyam Bhagavata. And he gives mercy specifically to innocent people, not envious people. So the same point is made by Srila Prabhupada in the purport in slightly different terms, where he says that if one is ready to hear submissively, he can get Krishna consciousness. He can get Krishna consciousness. And being able to hear submissively means he's not envious. I remember the first time I went to the Ardha Kumbh Mela in Allahabad in India. We'd heard about Mayavadis, but we'd never met any real Mayavadis. And so I would do the book table much of the time, and some Mayavadis came up to the book table, and not just one. and they would all say the same thing. You know, why Krishna? You know, why Krishna? Why do you worship Krishna as God? And they'll say, you know, why Krishna? Why not Durga? Why not Shiva? Why not Ganesh? But what they really mean is, why not you? Why not me? So they're envious of Krishna. Why Krishna? Why not me? I mean, eventually it comes to that. Why not me? So when someone's envious, they cannot appreciate the message of Krishna. And to the contrary, they become more agitated if you go on talking about Krishna. So therefore, the preacher avoids the envious, because if he tries to preach to them, they'll just become more angry. Like the Chanakya shloka, if you give good instruction to a fool, he'll just become angry. So we may speak in an open assembly, but actually the only ones who will benefit are the ones who are not envious. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that one should not preach to those who are envious, you know, those who are not faithful, those who are not austere. And Srila Prabhupada raises the question that devotees do preach in public, and there may be people in the audience who are not faithful, who are not devoted, who are not austere, and who are envious. Are such preachers going against the instruction of Lord Krishna in the Gita? And Srila Prabhupada replies that the devotees know the real purpose of the Lord, and the Lord wants that the living entities should become Krishna conscious. So even at the risk of antagonizing demons that may be in the audience, envious persons who may be in the audience, still the devotee preaches. Because if he doesn't take the risk, then he cannot come in touch with the innocent people. Because how can you distinguish, you know, who's innocent and who's envious? So the devotees know the Lord's heart, that the Lord wants the living entities to become Krishna conscious, and therefore they take the chance. And sometimes people in the audience react. I think of one instance with Srila Prabhupada at the first Delhi Pandal in Connaught Place in 1971, November. So every night, this was actually the first Pandal where the devotees did it, every night they invited some prominent person from a different field. So like one night they had, I forget his first name. His name was Bachchan. He was actually the father of Amitabh Bachchan, but he was a poet in his own right. So he was the chief guest one night as a poet. Then one night, the Canadian High Commissioner in New Delhi was the chief guest. And just recently someone told me he met him years later, and that he had actually started to chant and offer his food. Like, amazing. And the Lieutenant Governor of Delhi was the chief guest one night. And I don't know why they chose him, but they, Colonel Mohan of Mohan Meekin Breweries was the industrialist. But anyway, it was like a very distinguished event, and there were many sort of leaders in the Jansung political party that were behind the program, and the mayor of Delhi, Hans Rajgupta, was from Jansung. So it was like very glamorous, right in the center of the city, and many distinguished ladies and gentlemen were in the audience. So one evening, while Srila Prabhupada was speaking, this very wild-looking, I guess he was American, came forward to the stage. When I say wild-looking, I mean he had leather boots on. He was like, he had bare chest with just a vest and big tattoos over, and he was wearing chains around his neck, and he had like wild, long, disheveled hair. So he came forward to the stage, and you know, immediately Srila Prabhupada's disciples sort of braced to repulse him. And he came forward in a very challenging way. And when Prabhupada's disciples started to go forward, Prabhupada said, "No, let him speak." And then he told them to give him the microphone. There were a number of microphones, so they'd give him a microphone. Sort of very angry, belligerent, challenging way, he said to Srila Prabhupada, "Have you realized yourself within yourself?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes." So then the young man said, "Well, you know, in your lecture, you said that the Bhagavad Gita was 5,000 years old. Do you say the Bhagavad Gita is 5,000 years old?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Well, according to my authorities, the Bhagavad Gita is not more than 2,000 years old." So there was some argument about that. Then the young man said, "I want to ask you another question." And Prabhupada said, "No, I want to ask you a question." And the man said, "No, I asked you first." And Prabhupada said, "I'm not your servant. I'm not obliged to answer your question. You answer my question." So they started to argue, really, like shouting. And Prabhupada said, "You answer my question. What is the process for learning Bhagavad Gita?" And the young man was saying, "No, you answer my question. I asked first." And like the young man just became more and more, let's say, aggressive. Then finally Prabhupada sort of said, "Okay, you can remove him." So then Prabhupada's disciples came and escorted him. Oh yeah, I didn't even mention that. Prabhupada said, not just give him the microphone, he said, give him an asana. He had him come up on the stage. He gave him an asana. But then in the end, you know, he said, "All right, it's enough." So I was in the audience distributing books. And immediately the audience became polarized. They broke into two groups. The ones that were sympathetic with the young man and the ones that were sympathetic with Prabhupada. And it was like there was such pandemonium. I mean, you wouldn't have believed it. There was such pandemonium. It's like I was sort of in the outer perimeter, and, you know, like all these people started to swarm all over me. And mostly they were the ones that sided with the boy, Because the other ones just stayed in their seats, and they were saying, you know, your Guru Maharaj lost his temper. He shouldn't have lost his temper. And, you know, the boy asked a question. He should have answered his question. Why did he argue with him? And like that. And it was like, it was so heavy. You know, I tried to, like, quickly make my way towards the stages. And there were two or three of us out with books in the audience, and it was all the same thing. And meanwhile, these big politicians that were promoting the Pandal, that had, you know, sort of put their names behind it and organized the resources, they were upset with Prabhupada because this is also very interesting. They had political ambitions, which they thought could be furthered by their association with ISKCON. And one of the devotees even told Srila Prabhupada that, you know, they're coming and they're introducing you on the stage, but actually they just want to associate themselves with our movement so they can get more votes. And Srila Prabhupada said, that's all right. If someone wants to take advantage of us, but by their taking advantage of us, we don't lose, then we don't mind. Which was very instructive. In other words, Prabhupada was saying we're not envious. That was basically what he was saying. So he knew that they were taking advantage of their association with us to further their political careers, but it wasn't hurting us, so he didn't mind if they did it. So behind stage, because eventually I went behind the stage because it was like too wild out there and I was just like a young brahmachari. And so one of the organizers, one of the politicians, said to Malati that, you know, your Guru Maharaj has ruined everything. You know, he's lost his temper on the stage, he's ruined everything. And Mother Malati said, my Guru Maharaj hasn't ruined anything. And she gave him a slap on the face. Which I must say, I appreciated. And then, so meanwhile, on the stage, Srila Prabhupada began to speak on the, in response to the question he had asked to the challenging young man, what is the process for understanding Bhagavad Gita? And the process is to hear submissively. And Srila Prabhupada actually used the young man as an example of what the process is not. You know, you can't approach an authority in a challenging mood and expect to get knowledge because you'll just argue and waste your time and waste his time. So that's the requirement in the audience. That the audience should be submissive, open, not envious. Then, like Srila Prabhupada said in another context, that just like in conception, the male has to be potent and the female has to be fertile, then conception can take place. So if the speaker is potent and the audience is receptive, then Krishna consciousness can take place. So what is the potency of the speaker? The potency of the speaker is his bhakti. The speaker has to be a devotee. If the speaker is not a devotee, then the message will not have potency. And therefore, the Bhagavatam says, bhaktiya sanjataya bhaktiya, that bhakti comes from bhakti. Just like fire ignites fire, so bhakti comes from bhakti. But the bhakti in the heart of the devotee, specifically the preacher, sort of awakens the bhakti that's dormant in the heart of the audience. And thus the audience becomes awakened to Krishna consciousness. But again, bhakti is so powerful, although the usual method, and the method mentioned here, is the method of speaking. The preacher speaks and the audience hears submissively. But the pure devotee, like Srila Prabhupada, is permeated by bhakti. It's like Krishna pervades everything as Paramatma. So bhakti pervades everything within the devotee. And therefore any association with the devotee can inspire bhakti. Recently we were in Los Angeles and we heard different devotees speak about Srila Prabhupada on Vyasa Puja. And many devotees had the same experience. They'd never even met Srila Prabhupada before, but just by seeing him at the airport, they would start to cry. They would feel, you know, this is my spiritual master. There would be no doubt, even without hearing him speak. Because the fire of bhakti was so illuminated within him, it just pervaded him. And just by seeing him, devotees were inspired. And, of course, there's the statement in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhaktapada Duli Bhaktapada Jal, that the dust from the feet of the pure devotee and the water that's washed the feet of the pure devotee and the remnants of food tasted by the pure devotee are three very powerful substances, because they carry the bhakti. Just like if someone has a disease, you can get the disease by, you know, by breathing the same air or by, you know, eating the remnants of the person's food, or even, you know, using the same shower, or, you know, you can get the disease. Any way you come in contact with a person, you can get the disease. So it's the same way with bhakti. When someone is completely infused with bhakti, like Srila Prabhupada was, or any devotee, to some extent at least, you can get bhakti from them. But the main process is hearing from the devotee. And even the devotees who were inspired just by seeing Prabhupada, eventually they sat down and heard from him. So hearing is definitely the primary process, hearing and chanting. And by that process, Krishna and Krishna consciousness are awakened. They're ignited. And therefore that's, you know, our duty is to ignite the fire, you know, have the fire within us. And that's why Prabhupada said that to preach, we ourselves have to practice, especially, you know, chanting 16 rounds and following the four principles. That will give us the power to actually preach and affect others. So if we have bhakti, then we can give bhakti to others. And bhakti begins with shraddha. There are different stages, as you probably know, ado shraddha, tata sadhu sangha, tata vachana kriya, and so on, up to bhava and prema. They're all bhakti. They're just different stages of maturity. So if you have shraddha, you can awaken shraddha in the heart of someone else. And therefore, in one of the purports to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada explains that even a neophyte devotee who has shraddha, and by definition he will have shraddha, he can inspire Krishna consciousness in someone else. Because you can give what you have, at least you can give what you have. So if you have shraddha, that's bhakti. You can give shraddha to someone else. That means you can give bhakti to someone else, even if you're a neophyte. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada wanted to engage all of us in preaching and spreading Krishna consciousness. Because even if we just have shraddha, just the beginning of bhakti, we can impart Shraddha or Bhakti into the hearts of others, and they can become Krishna conscious. And by that service, we get the mercy of Guru and Gauranga, and then we ourselves advance. Like Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master told him that if you preach the message as you've heard it from me, you will benefit and the audience will benefit. So everyone benefits. That's the other thing. Like in the material world, if you have something and then you give it away, you have that much less. Like if I have $100 and I give you $10, I have $10 left. I only have $90. But in Krishna consciousness, the more you give, the more you get. Srila Prabhupada told the story of Ramakrishna and Vivekananda. So Vivekananda was the disciple of Ramakrishna, so-called. And so according to the story, and according to his book, Ramakrishna touched him. And so he closed his eyes, Ramakrishna touched him, and then all of his knowledge flowed into Vivekananda. And when Vivekananda opened his eyes, he saw that Ramakrishna was crying. He said, "Why are you crying, my master?" He said, "Because I've given all of my knowledge to you, and now I have none left." So that is a material conception of knowledge, of giving. That you give something and you have that much left. That's a material conception. But in Krishna consciousness, the more you give, the more you get. The more you preach, the more Krishna enlightens you with transcendental knowledge. And Srila Prabhupada said to the contrary, if you have knowledge and you don't share it with others, then you become envious. So it's in our interest to preach, and it's in the interest of the audience to hear the message submissively. And by that transaction, everyone, the fire of Krishna consciousness blazes more and more strongly in everyone's heart. Hare Krishna.
Jai.
Oh, any questions or comments?
Maharaj, are there instances of envious people who hear but who eventually become devotees, and like even though they're envious, and that's a disqualification, but by the power of the pure devotee, they can get purified and become devotees themselves? Or are there any specific examples you should apply?
Well, generally, the preacher avoids the envious. But there are examples of preachers who were so powerful that they could even convert envious people. And sometimes people can be tricked. I'm not making this up. Actually, Srila Prabhupada told this story. And then I'm going to relate it to an incident from scripture. But there was a student in a classroom who hated arithmetic. So no matter what the teacher would do to try to teach the child arithmetic, the child would refuse to learn. So then the teacher had the idea, and he or she drew a picture on the board of two cows. And then the teacher drew a picture of a bull. and then said, if the farmer has two cows and then gets one bull, how many animals does the farmer have? So then, you know, the student said three. And then, so like this, the teacher was teaching the child arithmetic in the guise, you know, of a story about a farmer with his different types of animals. Then finally, the student's classmate said, hey, the teacher's teaching you arithmetic. Don't you see what's happening? And then the student said, oh, I hate arithmetic. So like that, some people, it's like they just don't want to serve God. You know, it's in them that they don't want to serve God. But Srila Prabhupada said we can trick them into doing some service, just like the teacher tricked the student into doing arithmetic. So, like Jayananda Prabhu, he used to engage people in devotional service. They didn't know that they're engaging in devotional service. They just thought they were helping him out. But they got the benefit. So, now bringing the example to scripture, there's the story of Valmiki, who was like very sinful. And Narada, you know, he was such a sage, you know, such a powerful sage and devotee that he could even, you know, transform an envious person. Or like, you know, Nityananda Prabhu and Jagaya Madhai. But coming back to the idea of tricking, Valmiki was so sinful that he could not utter the holy name of Ram. He couldn't chant Ram, 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 Ram. So Narada told him to chant Mara, 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 Rama, 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 Rama. So he tricked him in a way into chanting the holy name of Ram. So there are examples of Mahabhagavatas, like Nityananda Prabhu or Narada Muni, who were able to influence envious people. But generally, we should avoid them. We can try to engage them, you know, by engage them in some service or give them some prasad or whatever. But direct preaching, it won't usually work. I mean, I had the same realization with my own father some years ago. It was funny because I was preaching to him about sort of like the idea of easy journey to other planets. And it's, you know, it was like, he thought we were crazy before I started telling him about easy journey to other planets, but after I started telling him, he was really sure that we were definitely crazy. And I could just see it in his expression that this is not leading anywhere. Is not leading anywhere. And from that moment I decided there's no use preaching to him because he's not open. He's not open. You know, the most I could do would be to engage him in some service. And that too, not because he wanted to do service to Krishna, but just like for me, because I asked, because I was his son. So in that way we can engage people who are adverse to Krishna consciousness. And that will help them. But to actually convert someone, it's very difficult. Better go on to the next person. Spend your whole time arguing and not getting it. Any other questions or comments? Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.